It was Ty Reed's story that first suggested the evening's theme to me, Small Miracles. Ty works in sales in Seattle, and he first told this story at a Fresh Ground Stories event. A warning, it deals with the subject of suicide. If you want to sit this one out, it's about 10 minutes long.
So I wasn't supposed to become a homeless drug addict and petty criminal. My family growing up was kind of like the Huxtables, if Theo really liked to smoke crack. And it really was my insistence on doing things my way that had landed me where I was. It turned me from a highly successful mortgage professional, very highly paid in 2006, and to a down-and-out homeless person in 2014. And really, bad decision-making was my downfall over and over again. Bad decisions about my money, about my girlfriends, about my associates and my activities had really led me down a bad road. As an example of some of the great decision-making that I would employ, in 2012, after 10 years of very hard drug use, I decided I no longer wanted to be the cliche black guy named Tyrone who smoked crack. And so I quit immediately and switched to meth. Breaking the color barrier there. So with decision-making like that, obviously, homelessness was the definite place I was going to end up. And now it's 2015, it's the summer. I've been homeless for about a year now, and I'm standing in a $400 a night hotel room in downtown Seattle that I've gotten by far less than honest means. And I'm alone. And this feeling of desperation and loneliness starts to wash over me. I pick up my phone and I text my friend who had just left the room, of course, to go get more drugs, and say, "I won't be here when you get back." When she asks why, my response is simply, "I'm tired. I can't do this anymore." I turn off my phone and I put on my backpack and I start to head towards the door. And as I do, I think back to just a couple of months earlier when, although God and I had always had a kind of a contentious relationship, I was in such a place of desperation that I actually prayed to God that my life would get better and get to look like something more normal somehow. And I wondered as I headed towards the door why those prayers had gone unanswered. How could a God who supposedly loved me so much forget about me? As I got to the elevator, I pushed the down button, and my thoughts turned to my family. And what will my family think when they find out that this one-time egomaniac, who was so concerned about how he looked and what people thought and his image, what will they think when they find out that he's dead because he walked himself into traffic in an obvious suicide and would end up dead on the streets, underweight, haggard, and homeless? And I feel some pain for just a second, and only a second, because my thoughts turn back to me. This is my moment. I can't think about them. This is about me ending my pain and my shame and my guilt. As the elevator arrives, you know, it's summer, so it's air conditioned. So it's cold inside, and there's nobody in it. So it's cold and it's empty, just the way that I feel right at that moment. I get on the elevator and I push the down button. And as the elevator begins to descend, my plan becomes clearer in my head. Okay, fourth floor. I'll go out to the street. I'll smoke one of my last two cigarettes. Third floor. I watch traffic really, really carefully because I need to pick the right moment to dash into it. Second floor, it's gotta be a big truck or an SUV because I don't wanna get injured. I wanna get ended. Lobby, doors open. I make my way out to the sidewalk as quickly as I can. I take out my cigarette and I start to smoke. It is a beautiful summer Seattle Saturday night. The streets are electric. There are people walking, talking, laughing, connecting with each other. Something I had forgotten how to do long ago. Lots of cars on the street. I think to myself, lots of good chances here to do what I need to do. So I'm standing there. I'm about halfway through my cigarette, and I'm just looking out into traffic. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this person starting to approach me. And I looked at him, and he looked kind of haggard, like I did, so I thought he might be homeless. Or since it's Seattle, he might have been a hipster. I wasn't sure which it was. But I thought he was going to come and ask me for my last cigarette, because on the streets of Seattle, I don't know if you know this, but you never smoke a pack alone. But instead of asking me for a cigarette, he asked me for help. And his story was this. He was an alcoholic. He had been kicked out of his house by his wife. And he's staying at the Union Gospel Mission. Hasn't eaten in a couple of days. Can I help him out with some food? And I have the thought, well, I don't have any money, even though I'm staying in this very expensive hotel room, but I have some money on my food card. And you can't take it with you. Somebody might as well make use of it. So I agree to help him, and we start walking to a 7-Eleven just a couple of blocks away. He's trying to engage me in conversation. What's your name, he says. I say, doesn't matter anymore. Where do you live? I don't live anywhere, but that doesn't matter anymore. And he's starting to get a sense that maybe there's something larger going on with me. So he falls silent for a few seconds. And then he says something that, quite frankly, shocks me. He turns and says, you know God has a plan for you, right? I kind of go blank for a couple of seconds. And I turn and look at him, and I say, it doesn't matter what God's plan is. I can't do this anymore. I'm tired. And I turn away so he can't see me starting to tear up. We get to the 7-Eleven. I go in the store. I buy him whatever I can. And I exit very quickly, even though he's still trying to talk to me or engage with me in some way. Because I felt like I still had to do what I had to do, and nothing was going to stop that. And when I get out to the sidewalk, streets that mere moments before were busy, bustling, with lots of people and lots of traffic, are empty. Now, when I say the street was empty, I don't mean there's a couple of people walking around, there's a couple of cars moving down the street. I mean there's absolutely no people, and there's no cars. This strikes me as very odd. So I walk up to the cross street, and I look up and down. No people, no cars. Under my breath, I say, are you effing kidding me? I take out my last cigarette, I sit on the sidewalk, and I start to smoke. And I say to myself, I guess tonight is not the night that I die. Now, in the movie of my life, starring Will Smith, likely directed by Spike Lee, this would be the moment when the clouds will part. I will learn all my lessons, and the very next day I will turn my life around. Unfortunately for me, my life is not a movie. And quite frankly, I hadn't had enough punishment yet. Life had not kicked my butt enough for me to have learned my lessons. But luckily for me, in just a few more months, I'd had enough. And I was able to start making some positive change in my life. Often people will ask me, how did you make such a monumental change? Going from someone who was sleeping in stolen hotel rooms or under a bridge, or getting high and not sleeping at all and just walking all night, to someone who is gainfully employed, has the love of his friends and family, and is actually a productive member of society. There's a lot of things that I could point to, but two things stand out very strongly for me. Number one, having had the opportunity to live in a sober home. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with sober homes, these are safe, stable environments where people like me who need to get in recovery and stay away from drugs and alcohol can live to reestablish their lives. It was incredibly instrumental in me being able to lead a life that was somewhat normal. And these are very important places for folks. Number two, I am irritatingly optimistic. I see the best of everything. And I tend to live my life in gratitude, and I focus on the things that I have instead of what I don't. And quite frankly, while most days it would be nice to have $1 million more and be 3% body fat, the fact is that I have more than what I need, and I'm really grateful for what I have. One of the other things I'm also grateful for is the opportunity to have been here with you tonight. So thank you so much for listening and attending.
Tyreed works in Seattle.